WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. $45,000 dock workers from Maine to Texas remain on strike weeks after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 0.5 point. So what could those 2 pieces of economic news mean for consumers in our area and for the economy as a whole? For some answers, we checked in with President and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, Austin Goolsbee. I started by asking about the tens of thousands of longshoremen on strike at ports on the East Coast and in the Gulf of Mexico, and how long he estimates that would need to last for consumers in our area to start feeling the effects.
I think, from what I've heard, this was predicted, and people, the retailers and manufacturers, have been trying to stockpile and get everything they can through the ports before this happened. Mm-hmm. So they've got about 2 weeks of stuff, and after that, you'll start to see it have more direct impact.
This is day 3 of the strike. So yesterday, the White House said it's time for negotiations to get underway. Aside from supply chain issues, I mean, how else might a port strike affect the economy?
I think it's mostly supply chain issues, but not solely parts that go into the making of other things. I consider a supply chain issue if you go down to buy Christmas presents or whatever, and the strike is still going, that's a supply chain issue. We're just going to have shortages and prices of some things might go up.
Yeah.
I've seen analysts say that the strike costs the U.S. economy something like $4 billion a day. Now, it's a many trillions of dollars a year economy, so $4 billion a day is a big number, but it's not an overwhelming number. It's not that kind of number, is not a recession.
Yeah.
But it starts as an inconvenience, and it gets worse the longer it goes.
Switching gears, last month, the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 0.5 percentage point. Now, it's what you've said is likely to be the first of many cuts now that inflation's more under control. So remind us, why this 0.5 percentage point cut, which is considered large, rather than a 0.25 percentage point cut?
I will answer that, but let me start, if I may, with a little bit of a what does the Fed look at and base its decisions on? The Federal Reserve Act says the Fed is supposed to look at 2 things when setting monetary policy, and basically only 2. We are to maximize employment and stabilize prices, which effectively means we're trying to keep unemployment low and get inflation down to 2%. Mm-hmm. We've had stellar job market, too hot of a job market, and inflation way above 2% and out of control. So in a way, we have gone through a period where only one side of the what we call the dual mandate, mm-hmm. only one side, we had to get inflation down. That was our overwhelming priority. That has now largely taken place. In 2023, inflation came down almost as much as it has ever come down in a single year, and it did so without a recession, which is basically unprecedented. And the committee made, I'm only supposed to speak for myself. I'm not supposed to speak for the committee.
Yeah.
But the committee put out a statement that outlined, when rates will come down will be when we are confident that we're on a path to 2%. And in a way, we need to start thinking about both sides of the mandate again.
Yeah.
We're there. We're the new inflation numbers that are coming in are basically at the target. The unemployment rate at 4.2% is essentially at the level a lot of people think is where that's the full employment steady state. Let's keep it there. If we could just freeze everything how it is right now on inflation and unemployment, that would be an excellent outcome.
Yeah.
The thing that's different is that if you ask what interest rate should it settle down, where will interest rates settle? We're a long way above that, okay? And one of the oldest lessons of monetary policy is if the rates are way higher than normal, inflation and unemployment are not going to stay where you want them to be. That's going to start getting worse. So that's why I say 25 versus 50 and at what meeting should it start is not the most important question. The most important question is what's the through line? And to me, the through line is clear. Inflation's coming down and is close to target. Unemployment has come up and the job market is basically where we would want it to be. And so the main thing that has to happen is rates need to come down over the next 12 months by a lot to get to what in the economist language, neutral.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get the rates to normal so that it's like your bathtub. Yeah. You know, if the water's too hot in a bathtub, you add cold water. But if you fill the tub and the water is how you want it, turn off the cold water or else you know what's going to happen.
So that is,
I think, where we are.
So what I'm hearing you say is inflation is getting under control. Unemployment's at a relatively low 4.2%. Yet Americans, a lot of them, feel that the economy isn't doing well and it's not working for them. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, look, now that's a separate thing. Let's call it the vibes question. Even if the numbers were positive and where we want to be, what do we make of the fact that people don't feel it and they say they think the economy is not good? Number one, I told you the Fed mandate is that we got to look at the actual numbers, not the vibes.
Mm-hmm.
We have always cared about the vibes because they have been an indicator, a leading indicator of people's actual behavior. So consumer spending has, up until recently, been very tied to the vibes. So if you ask people, how's the economy? If people said it stinks, they would very soon stop spending. That relationship has broken down for some reasons we understand and for some we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But if the vibes are no longer telling you what people are going to do with their spending, in a way, the Fed has to pay a little less attention to the vibes. And the only couple of points I would add about the vibes are, number one, there's been a lot of research by economists about what drives perceptions of the economy.
Right.
Other than just the numbers and the fundamentals. And one, as everyone knows, some very public prices, like the price of gasoline, the price of milk and groceries, those have an outsized impact on people's perceptions. Two, they do pay attention to what they read in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And now in our current media environment, people read the media that they want to read. So there has been a bit of a partisanization of economic data that when a Republican becomes president, then the Democrats say, ooh, the economy is terrible. When a Democrat becomes president, the Republicans say, ooh, the economy is terrible. So its use as a predictive instrument for the economy has gotten a little less. And there's a lag with the vibes. So as conditions improve over a course of 6 months or so, you will probably see the vibes improve.
Yeah.
And you have started to see the vibes
improve. A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people in the Chicago area and across the country, they've been hesitant to buy a home. with mortgage rates in the 6-8% range right now. Now, if interest rates continue to go down, mortgage rates will follow. But do you think that we'll ever get back to the mortgage rates below 3% like we had in 2020 and 2021? Like, those were the lowest, ever.
Nobody's ever seen anything like that. So
probably not.
Probably not. But I don't know. When the Fed meets, the FOMC meets, every 3 months they put out a statement of economic projections in which they ask each of the members, what do you think will be conditions and interest rates at the end of next year, at the end of the year after? And they ask, in the long run, where do you think they will be? The long run estimates of where interest rates will be are well above zero, which is where they were before COVID. Mm-hmm. And when the interest rate that the Fed sets is around zero, that corresponded to mortgage rates that were historically extremely low. If the projections are right, mortgages likely won't go back down all the way.
Yeah.
But they could still go back down from where they are now. And where they are now is down from their peaks.
Right. But even if mortgage rates do come down significantly, many people still won't have the money.
They still won't have the money. And houses are expensive. That's the thing that I was going to say.
Home prices are so high.
So even if we succeed at getting the inflation rate, which is just how fast the prices are going up, even if we succeed at getting the inflation rate down, they're still expensive. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I would like to call people's attention to, and it's even more true in some housing markets, not Chicago, but it's true in Chicago. We had 2% inflation before the pandemic, but that wasn't from everything growing at 2%. Goods had minus 1% inflation, services around 2.5% inflation, and housing 3.5%. So for a 10 plus year period, the relative price of housing compared to, say, goods that you buy in the store was going up like 4-5% a year. And I'm not taking us back to the classroom to say, if you know anything about compounding, you know that if something's growing 5% a year, after 15 years, that's going to be really different. So the relative price of housing, people aren't wrong to say housing looks expensive.
Right.
People aren't wrong to say, when my parents bought a house, they can afford it. And
right.
I can't afford a condo. That's not wrong. That is correct. The relative price of housing is up a lot over 15, 20 years, and it's up even more in the last 5 years. If interest rates on mortgages came down for the same price house, it would make the monthly payment more affordable. But we still got to come to terms. I think the economist in me says, you want house price inflation to fall, you got to build more houses. Mm. So I think there is a supply component that has been relatively unremarked on, but is
and included in there a shortage of affordable housing.
And that's what makes housing unaffordable is there's not enough affordable housing.
Exactly. Well, as you alluded to earlier, the economy, it is, as always, a top issue in the presidential race. And most presidents, they like to tout how many jobs they've created, right? We hear that all the time. So as a key member of the central banking system, I know you can't comment on politics specifically, but I do wonder if you can comment on this. How much power does a sitting president have to shape the economy of the United States?
Well, look, Sasha, I appreciate that you said that. You become a sworn member of the Federal Reserve, you're out of the elections business. So there was a time in my life where I worked in the Obama administration.
Right.
And I think it's fair to say that if you're an economics professor, 90%+ of what happens in the economy has nothing to do with Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. We're overwhelmingly a private sector driven economy, and that's where growth comes from. And policy, both monetary policy and fiscal policy lay the groundwork, but basically it's a private sector economy.
So to some extent, a president is simply inheriting the economic ups and downs of the moment. Is that right?
I don't totally know. I do know that for the monetary policy part, I always say our motto in Chicago is there is no bad weather, there is only bad clothing. So you tell me what is going to be the weather, and I will tell you, here's the jacket that I'm going to put on. And that's the monetary policy motto, too. The Congress, the president, they can argue about policy. They can do whatever they want to do. How that affects the economy, then that's what the monetary authority is going to respond to.
We'll leave it there. We've been speaking with Austin Goolsbee, who's president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Thank you for spending time with us.
Great to see you again,
Good
Sasha.
To see you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Dan Tucker, mixed by Ari Mejia. In addition to covering the economy, we drop conversations about food every week. So if you're interested in hearing more, you can check out our full archive at wbez.org/reset. And make sure to subscribe to this podcast. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.